out in the swamp, they made great ceremony over the mule. They mocked everything human in death. Starks led off with a great eulogy on our departed citizen, our most distinguished citizen, and the grief he left behind him, and the people loved his speech. It made him more solid than building the schoolhouse had done. He stood on the distended belly of the mule for a platform and made gestures. When he stepped down, they hoisted Sam up, and he talked about the mule as a schoolteacher first. Then he set his hat like John Pearson and imitated his preaching. He spoke of the joys of mule heaven, to which the dear brother had departed this valley of sorrow, the mule angels flying around, the miles of green corn and cool water, a pasture of pure bran with a river of molasses running through it. And most glorious of all, no Matt Bonner with plow lines and halters to come in and corrupt. Up there, mule angels would have people to ride on. And from his place beside the glittering throne, the dear departed brother would look down into hell and see the devil plowing Matt Bonner all day long in a hell-hot sun and laying the rawhide to his back. With that, the sisters got mock-happy and shouted and had to be held up by the menfolks. Everybody enjoyed themselves to the highest. And then finally, the mule was left to the already impatient buzzards. They were holding a great flying meet way up over the heads of the mourners, and some of the nearby trees were already peopled with the stoop-shouldered forms. As soon as the crowd was out of sight, they closed in circles. The near ones got nearer, and the far ones got near. A circle, a swoop, and a hop with spread out wings. Close in, till some of the more hungry or daring perched on the carcass. They wanted to begin, but the parson wasn't there. So a messenger was sent to the ruler in a tree where he sat. The flock had to wait the white-headed leader, but it was hard. They jostled each other and pecked at heads in hungry irritation. Some walked up and down the beast from head to tail, tail to head. The parson sat motionless in a dead pine tree about 2 miles off. He had scented the matter as quickly as any of the rest, but decorum demanded that he sit oblivious until he was notified. Then he took off with ponderous flight and circled and lowered, until the others danced in joy and hunger at his approach. He finally lit on the ground and walked around the body to see if it were really dead, peered into its nose and mouth, examined it well from end to end, and leaped upon it and bowed, and the others danced a response. That being over, he balanced and asked, "What killed this man?" The chorus answered,
Bear fat."
"What killed this man?"
Bear fat."
"What killed this man?"
Bear fat."
"Who'll stand his funeral?"
"Wee!"
"But all right now." So he picked out the eyes in the ceremonial way, and the feast went on. The yellow mule was gone from the town except for the porch talk and for the children visiting his bleaching bones now and then in the spirit of adventure. Joe returned to the store, full of pleasure and good humor. But he didn't want Janie to notice it because he saw that she was sullen, and he resented that. She had no right to be, the way he thought things out. She wasn't even appreciative of his efforts, and she had plenty cause to be. Here he was, just pouring honor all over her, building a high chair for her to sit in and overlook the world, and she here pouting over it. Not that he wanted anybody else, but just too many women would be glad to be in her place. He ought to box her jaws. But he didn't feel like fighting today, so he made an attack upon her position, backhand. I had to laugh at the people out there in the woods this morning, Janie. You can't help but laugh at the capers they cuts. But all the same, I wish my people would get more business in them and not spend so much time on foolishness.
Everybody can't be like you, Jody. Somebody's bound to want to laugh and play.
Who don't love to laugh and play?
Well, you make out like you don't anyhow.
God, I don't make out no such a lie. But it's time for all things. But it's awful to see so many people don't want nothing but a full belly and a place to lay down and sleep afterwards. It makes me sad sometimes, and then again it makes me mad.
They say things sometimes that tickles me nearly to death, but I won't laugh just to disencourage them. Janie took the easy way away from a fuss. She didn't change her mind, but she agreed with her mouth. Her heart said, "Even so, but you don't have to cry about it." But sometimes Sam Watson and Lige Moss forced a belly laugh out of Joe himself with their eternal arguments. It never ended because there was no end to reach. It was a contest in hyperbole and carried on for no other reason. Maybe Sam would be sitting on the porch when Lige walked up. If nobody was there to speak of, nothing happened. But if the town was there like on Saturday night, Lige would come up with a very grave air. Couldn't even pass the time of day for being so busy thinking. Then, when he was asked what was the matter, in order to start him off, he'd say,
"This question done by drove me crazy. And Sam, he knows so much into things, I want some information on the subject."
Walter Thomas was due to speak up and egg the matter on.
"Yeah, Sam always got more information than he know what to do with. He's bound to tell you whatever it is you wants to know."
Sam begins an elaborate show of avoiding the struggle. That draws everybody on the porch into it.
"How come you want me to tell you? You always claim God done met you around the corner and talked his inside business with you. Tain't no use in you asking me nothing. I'm questionizing you."
"Well, how you gonna do that, Sam, when I arrived this conversation myself? I'm asking you."
"Asking me what? You ain't told me the subject yet."
"Don't aim to tell you. I aims to keep you in the dark all the time. Now, if you smart like you let on, you can find out."
"You scared to let me know what it is, because you know I'll tear it to pieces. You got to have a subject to talk from. Do you can't talk. If a man ain't got no bounds, he ain't got no place to stop."
By this time, they are the center of the world.
"Well, all right, then. Since you own up you ain't smart enough to find out what I'm talking about, I'll tell you. What is it that keeps a man from getting burnt on a red-hot stove? Caution or nature?"
"Shucks, I thought you had something hard to ask me. Walter can tell you that."
"If the conversation is too deep for you, how come you don't tell me so and just hush up? Walter can't tell me nothing of the kind. I'm an educated man. I keeps my arrangements in my hands. And if it kept me up all night long studying about it, Walter ain't liable to be no help to me. I needs a man like you."
"And then again, Lige, I'm going to tell you, I'm going to run this conversation from a gnat heel to a lice. It's nature that keeps a man off a red-hot stove."
"Uh-huh. I knowed you was going to crawl up in that holler, but I aims to smoke you right out. Tain't no nature at all. It's caution, Sam."
"Tain't no such a thing. Nature tells you not to fool with no red-hot stove. And you don't do it neither."
"Listen, Sam, If it was nature, nobody wouldn't have to look out for babies touching stoves, would they? Because they just naturally wouldn't touch it. But they sure will. So it's caution.
No, it ain't. It's nature. Because nature makes caution. It's the strongest thing that God ever made now. Fact is, it's the only thing God ever made. He made nature, and nature made everything else.
No, nature didn't either. A whole heap of things ain't even been made yet.
But tell me something you know of that nature ain't made yet.
She ain't made it so you can ride a butt-headed cow and hold on to the horns.
Yeah, but that ain't your point.
Yeah, it is, too.
No, it ain't neither.
Well, what is my point?
You ain't got none so far.
Yeah, it is, too, Walter cut in. The red hot stove is his point.
He know mighty much, but he ain't proved it yet. Sam, I say it's caution, not nature, that keeps folks off a red hot stove.
How is the sun going to be before his paw? Nature is the first of everything. Ever since self or self, nature been keeping folks off red hot stoves. That caution you talk about ain't nothing but a humbug. He's an insect that nothing he got belongs to him. He got eyes like something else, wings like something else, everything. Even his hum is the sound of somebody else.
Man, what you talking about? Caution is the greatest thing in the world. If it wasn't for caution.
Show me something that caution ever made. Look what nature took and done. Nature got so high in her black hen, she got to lay a white egg. Now you tell me, how come what got into man that he got to have hair around his mouth? Nature.
That ain't the porch was boiling now. Starks left the store to Hezekiah Potts, the delivery boy, and come took a seat in his high chair.
Look at that great big old scoundrel beast up there at Hall's filling station. A great big old scoundrel. He eats up all the folks out of the house and then eat the house.
Oh, Tim said you vomit nowhere. They can eat no house. That's a lie. I was there yesterday, and I ain't seen nothing like that. Where is he?
I didn't see him, but I reckon he is in the backyard someplace. But they got his picture out front there. They was netting it up when I come past there this evening.
Well, all right now. If he eats up houses, how come he don't eat up the filling station?
That's cause they got him tied up so he can't. They got a grippy old picture telling how many gallons of that Sinclair high compression gas he drank at one time and how he more than 1,000,000 years old.
Tain't nothing no 1,000,000 years old.
The picture's right up there where everybody can see it. They can't make the picture till they see the thing, Kendi.
How they gonna tell he's 1,000,000 years old? Nobody wasn't born that far back.
By the rings on his tail, I reckon. Man, these white folks got ways for telling anything they wants to know.
Well, where he been all this time then?
They caught him over there in Egypt. Seemed like he used to hang around there and eat up them pharaoh's tombstones. They got the picture from doing it. Nature is high in a vomit like that. Nature and salt. That's what makes a strong man like Big John the Conqueror. He was a man with salt in him. He could give a flavor to anything.
Yeah, but he was a man that was more than man. Tain't no more like him. He wouldn't dig potatoes and he wouldn't rake hay. He wouldn't take a whooping and he wouldn't run away.
Oh, yeah. Somebody else could, if they tried hard enough. Me, myself, I got salt in me. If I like man flesh, I could eat some man every day. Some of them is so trashy, they let me eat them.
Lord, I love to talk about Big John. Lest we tell lies on old John.
But
here come Bootsy and Titi and Big Woman down the street, making out they are pretty by the way they walk. They've got that fresh, new taste about them, like young mustard greens in the spring. And the young men on the porch are just bound to tell them about it and buy them some treats. Here come my order right now, Charlie Jones announces and scrambles off the porch to meet them. But he has plenty of competition, a pushing, shoving show of gallantry. They all beg the girls to just buy anything they can think of. Please let them pay for it. Joe is begged to wrap up all the candy in the store and order more. All the peanuts and soda water, everything. Gal, I'm crazy about you. Charlie goes on to the entertainment of everybody. I'll do anything in the world except work for you and give you my money. The girls and everybody else help laugh. They know it's not courtship. It's acting out courtship, and everybody is in the play. The three girls hold the center of the stage till Daisy Blunt comes walking down the street in the moonlight.